Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Second City podcast. The date is the 19th of March, 2024. May end up being a fairly significant
one.
day, yes, for reasons we'll get into. My name's Daniel. I'm joined as ever by Callum Byrne. Callum, how are you? How are you keeping? You all good?
Not too bad. It's been a crazy few days. I broke my toe on Friday, and
So I
then.
saw, yeah.
Yeah, and then we booked tickets to the EFL Trophy yesterday.
We
So.
did, we did. So who are we going to see?
We're going to see Wickham versus Peterborough.
So do you have like access? You live near Wickham, don't you? So do you have like
I
access
do.
somehow? You've been
I
to a
have
few Wickham
access.
games, and we thought, why not? Just why not? Might
Why not?
maybe Blues will be in said final next year. Who knows?
Yeah.
Hopefully not.
We're on a scouting mission for
yeah, pretty
Tony
much.
Mowbray next year for Wickham and Peterborough.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, so we're recording. We got a bit lucky, actually. Normally we record this on the Monday night. We had to do it on the Tuesday morning this week, just for like, you know, scheduling reasons and so on. May have been a real stroke of luck because some huge news has broken this morning. For reasons we will get into.
And normally the big news breaks about an hour after we end the recording. So this has
Yeah.
been a nice change of pace.
Yes, this has been nice. We can actually wake up, prepare for it. That's quite nice. But yeah, so we'll get onto all that. Villa obviously had a huge week last week. You were in Europe on Thursday, weren't you? And you had a Premier League game at the weekend in the race for Europe for next season. Blues obviously played a couple of games as well in the league, which all ties into what we're going to be talking about. And we're going to do a little special feature later as well. Obviously, it was St. Patrick's Day at the weekend, and so we were talking about the best Irish players to play for both Blues and Villa. So we're going to do our top five lists in a bit. You may have noticed Callum, if for those watching on YouTube, Callum has come specially prepared, which leads
Yeah.
us really nicely into the start. We start what we always do with what we're wearing. So I'm going to guess first this week, Cal.
Yeah.
Because you've gone...
I've gone
very left field. The
green.
first time, yeah, Callum's gone green. He's not wearing a Villa shirt. He's wearing a Republic of Ireland shirt to celebrate. New
Yeah, and
Balance.
New Balance, a rare one for international shirts to have a sponsor on because they don't actually wear them with a sponsor, but
Yeah.
part of, I
Ireland,
think the
yeah, do
Islands
quite well.
tend to sell them with the sponsors on, so they haven't actually got a sponsor at the moment, which is the shirt which is currently behind you, although the new
Yeah.
one's going to be announced like probably today or tomorrow.
Yeah, international team, they're bad for how often they wheel out a new kit. It's really a bit dodgy, in my opinion, considering how much they play and stuff.
Yeah, it is kind of mad. This one's nice. It's got like this sort of triangular hexagon pattern sort of in it. Little bit of orange on the neck to shoulder line. Really nice shirt. New Balance, I feel like, are really underrated. I feel like some of their Liverpool kits were really nice,
Oh,
especially at
yeah.
the end of their deal. They had some really nice kits, and their Ireland shirts across the board were pretty nice.
Yeah, that's. Is it 2018-ish? 2018?
It is the 2018 kit,
Yeah.
yes. Not a special year for Ireland by any stretch of
Not
the
many
imagination.
years are.
No, they won one game in 2018, which was against the United States in a friendly. They lost to Turkey, they lost to France, they lost to Wales twice. One of them was 4-1 in the Nations League, a draw with Poland, a draw with Northern Ireland, and two very dull nil-nils with, do you want to guess the nation, Dan? Because they played this team so much in this era.
I mean, the first team that comes to mind is Denmark, but I doubt the group.
Yes.
Was it? Well, okay. The
Yeah.
only thing that made me hesitate was they always tend to lose to Denmark as well.
I don't know. I feel like they had a lot of draws with Denmark. We watched an Ireland-Denmark score draw in Cheltenham the year before, I think.
What were they?
Yeah,
Was
yeah.
that when you came
Or they
down?
might have lost. Or was it? Or they might have lost to
Well, that
Denmark. I
wouldn't have
remember
been
Christian
the.
Eriksen.
Would that have been the. Would it have lined up? Would
Qualifiers.
it have been the playoffs for the World Cup? Because they drew the first
Probably.
leg, didn't they? And
Yeah.
they lost the second leg. Yeah, that makes sense, actually. It could have been.
Yeah.
Did they? Yeah, they drew. I'm sure they drew the first leg. It might have been
I'm pretty
0-0
sure
or
that's the one we
1-1.
watched, but
Yeah,
yeah, I think it was
that makes
1-1.
sense. That would line up. Yeah, it was like late 2017, wasn't it? So that makes
Yeah.
sense. Yeah, I've got that shirt, that exact
I was going to
Ireland shirt
say, I
as
think you have
well.
this shirt, and there
That's
is a
a
player on the back of this shirt as well.
Do I even need to guess? It's Hourahan, as he says it, as it's
Yeah.
probably meant to be said.
Harahan 14 on the back. It's there somewhere.
I can
Yeah.
see it.
I
Yeah,
can't turn
very
around
good.
this week. It will hurt too much on my foot. So
Oh,
you just
fair enough.
have to believe me that it's there.
Fair enough. I just as a side note, yeah, behind me here is the current Castore Republic of Ireland kit with the so no sponsor. It's got the new badge as well, the redesigned badge. That is, I'm sure you'll agree, Carl. That is a beauty of a kit. That's absolutely banging with like the
I
pinstripes.
very, very nearly bought that kit
It is
when it
beautiful.
came
Yeah,
out.
it's lovely. Very good. Nice little side note there. I may chuck that Ireland shirt on for the Irish segment later, for
The
the
top
top Ireland
five
player
players.
segment. Yeah. Cool. What do you think I'm wearing then? Gone more, just gone for blues. Obviously. So, bit of side note, I had a different kit. I was a different shirt. I'm not wearing the full kit, obviously. There was a different shirt I was going to wear this week just to mix it up. It was an older one. But big news this morning. I thought it'd be more appropriate to wear this instead.
Ooh, so it's obviously well, it's spoiler alert, it's going to be Gary Rowett era.
Yeah.
A Cabrini, Zapago, is that
Yep.
yeah, Zapago, yeah, a company that I've never heard of, so they're probably doing very well these days.
We only had them for one season, I think, so.
And that's interesting. So you've got another collared shirt where it's got like a traditional like folded collar, but there's no button or popper, am I
No,
right?
I can't feel one, no.
So let's have a think. So you didn't wear that the year we were in the championship with Rout for half a season. You didn't wear it the year before because that's the sash kit that is also behind you. So I'm going to go for the year before that, which would be 14-15 home.
Very good, very, very good. Yeah, well done. Yeah, very good. I've actually got the other two Rowett ones here as well. So I've got for those watching on YouTube, I've got the 15-16 one, which is this sash one here, and then I've got the one which ended up the first Adidas one we had, which ended up being Zola Redknapp era as well. But yes. So yeah, this is 2014-15 home. You probably can't see it there, but it's actually got very faint pinstripes on it as well. But yeah, you probably won't be able to see it. It's very
Yeah, I
faint.
can't see them now.
They're just a different, slightly different shade of blue. Yeah, this is 14-15. So yes, I'm wearing this one because some big news regarding Rowett this morning. So thought it'd be cool to get the what was our kit when he joined us, which is nearly 10 years. Will be 10 years ago this November, I think. So this kit will be 10 years old already this year, which is pretty mad to think. This was a pretty. Well, it started awfully this season. So Lee Clark was our manager and started really poorly, and that culminated with Clark being sacked, and we had Brian McDermott, who was his assistant, take over for a couple of games. We lost both of those games, and the second one of those we lost 8-0 at home to Bournemouth, which is the biggest defeat Blues have had in my lifetime for sure.
Brian McDermott famously got Reading promoted.
Not Brian McDermott, what was his name? Maybe not Brian McDermott. What was his name?
Brian
I thought it
McDermott
was
was
Brian.
definitely the Reading manager that might have the championship record points tally, so I'm not convinced he managed Blues in an 8-0 defeat to Bournemouth.
Who am I thinking of?
I don't know.
It was definitely something McDermott something. Never mind. Who was it? Okay, we're just going to pause here. Okay, we're back after a brief interruption. I have no idea where Brian McDermott came from. Malcolm Crosby was the man. Where did I get Brian McDermott from? I didn't even double check it. I was. Oh yeah, it was Brian McDermott was this. It was one of the things I didn't even think to check in my research. A man called Malcolm Crosby was. It was. Wow. Sorry, I don't know where that came from. But yeah, we lost 8-0 at home to Bournemouth. So then we brought in Gary Rowett, who was the Burton Albion manager at the time. I'd actually just met him, sort of. Do you remember late kickoff was the it was a
Yes.
late night. Sounds really dodgy, but it was like a late evening like BBC show for like local teams, and I went to a recording of it, and he was a pundit on it, and so it's really annoying that I didn't really know who he was at the time. Like I didn't. Little did I know he'd be the Blues manager within about 2 months. But yeah, he came in and did an amazing job. We drew our first game away 0-0 at Wolves, and then we had best game of the season by far for me anyway in terms of just like the moment. His first home game was a night game against Watford, and we won 2-1. Clayton Donaldson scored twice. That was like a really special night. And yeah, we just steadily improved all season, game on game. We had a great win against Reading where we won 6-1. Damari Gray was like unplayable. I think he maybe got a hat trick. He was absolutely outrageous. And yeah, we just steadily climbed up the league all season. We had like, fits and starts at times, but we won our last three games and ended up finishing 10th. So considering I think we were second bottom when Rowett came in at the start of November, to finish 10th was a huge achievement and would actually lead to quite a positive era for the next couple of years for Blues. A couple of players that we brought in this year, we brought in Michael Morrison on loan, and then it became permanent later on. Robert Tesh, a player that didn't really work out with Diego Fabbrini, but he was actually pretty good when he came in for this season. Jonathan Grounds, Stephen Gleeson, maybe less said about this one the better, David Cotterill, Clayton Donaldson, David Davis, of course, ended up playing for the club for years. And of course, we re-signed Nikola Zigic this year as well. Who came back in for a few months on a for a sort of a farewell tour was more what it felt like, really. This season did have, I would say, the scariest moment I've had as a Blues fan, though, which was the FA Cup third round, where we'd been in really good form, and we had Blyth Spartans away, and Blyth
I remember
Spartans,
this, yeah.
they were like the lowest ranked team in the competition still. It was like, it would have been like one of the biggest shocks in FA Cup history if they'd beaten us. And we were 2-0 down at half time. So that was not great. But thankfully we managed to turn it around. Lee Novak and Wes Thomas scoring the goals for us, which feels like a long time ago since they were playing for us. And I remember that. And I remember it just wasn't a nice experience. It was like we were on the end of like possibly the biggest humiliation in FA Cup history. And the whole thing was just not enjoyable. I remember when they did the draw for the ra that round at Blyth Spartans, like training ground or their stadium or something, and Blyth Spartans get drawn out as a home team, and then they go like, and they will play number four, and there was like they were doing it at Blyth Stadium. There was a huge like, everyone's like, oh my God, number four, that could be like Arsenal, or that's gonna be like one of the, and then Birmingham City, and everyone went, oh, there was like a collect. It was like it just wasn't like. And then I remember we beat them, and then I can't remember exactly who the players were. There was a few of them that did it. We beat them 3-2, and some of our players had the cheek to tweet like, "Yeah, it shouldn't be so disrespectful then, should you? Take that." I was like, "Mate, we beat like a team of farmers, like just about beat them. They're like semi-professional footballers, and we just about beat them. Like we had Zigic, who had played at like the World Cup, playing for us." But
It's one
yeah,
of
so
those
that.
FA Cup draws where, like, when the draws for the League Cup and the FA Cup, you want a nice, easy draw, preferably at home. But then there's the teams that are like the lowest ranked teams. Like, you don't want to play them because
No, you've got nothing
if
to
you
get out
lose
of it.
it, yeah.
Like, we either were going to lose and be humiliated, or we win, but just about, so that's not very impressive. Or we obviously we could draw, but or we could smash them. But there's no, it's like beating San, it's like when England beats San Marino. It just doesn't, it like, that's probably a good comparison. Imagine England beating San Marino like 3-2 and being 2-0 down at half time. That's kind of the level. But yeah, anyway, this is 2014-15 home. Lovely kit, I must say. Yeah, sponsors, God knows what happened to them. But yeah, nice kit.
And that, I think, will lead us very nicely into the breaking news of the day. It hasn't quite been officially announced as we record, but it will probably be announced by the time it goes out, which is Gary Rower is going back to Birmingham City.
Yeah, just, are you, what are your, like, you, are you like, what, from the outside looking in, it must be like, what are you thinking? Like, what's.
It's really weird. But I said to you a couple of weeks ago on here, should you be looking at an interim while Mowbray was out? And at the time you were like, weren't convinced and said no. So I think it's, I mean, if anything, it's a bit of a damning, it's a bit damning on what's happened to Gary Rowett's career in the last couple of years, that he's going back to Birmingham City, but as like a 3 month interim. He
Oh, is
didn't do it.
that?
He almost got, like he almost got Millwall into the playoffs last year. And then this season's not gone very well. And now it's like Frank Lampard was the manager of Chelsea. Yes, he didn't do a great job and was awful at Everton. But then, like, within the space of like a few months, he went from being a full-time Premier League manager at Everton to just being Chelsea's interim to the end of the season. Like, it kind of implies, if he keeps you up, I guess it's job done. If he doesn't, Wait, what, you know, there's not really a lot he can gain out of this other than maybe some sentiment of he is a Midlands lad. I think he was a Villa fan growing up, and he obviously managed at Burton, he managed at Blues. So it's interesting from his for him what he's got to gain out of it. But I think for Blues, I think it's a very good interim appointment.
Yeah, I mean it's it really is. So I've never had this as a Blues fan, like a manager coming back. I don't think I've ever had that. It's very
It's like
rare
Steve
with players.
McLaren
Yeah, it's not that bad, bloody hell. It's
at
like Steve McLaren at Derby, one of the great anomalies of
Derby.
football. Yeah, it's like when a player comes back, which doesn't happen much at Blues, but it is like going back in time. It's a weird feeling. It brings back like memories of when you were like where you were at that point, and it just kind of, I don't know, it's a weird thing. But yeah, so the story, as we say, not fully broken yet, but they're not been announced yet, but it seems like the plan is to get Rowett in as like a caretaker consultant is the rumor, but to all intents and purposes he will be like an interim manager. Mark Venus has been in charge for 6 games now. We've lost five of them. The absolute nadir of which was Middlesbrough last Tuesday. It was about as bad as I've seen us this season. The only game that springs to mind that was worse was maybe it was a couple under Rooney, maybe. There was the Stoke game on Boxing Day where we lost 3-1 and we were absolutely hopeless. And then we didn't even lose this game, but the Rotherham home game under Rooney as well was, I don't know how we didn't lose. I mean, in terms of performance, we were absolutely dreadful. And I like Mark Venus has been Tony Mowbray's assistant for like 20 years. I just wonder if he like we are like we lost both games last week. I said on here, I think we need 4 points from these two games. We didn't get any. We were so bad against Middlesbrough. Give the ball away cheaply. And of course, Riley McGree, an ex-Blues player, scores an absolute worldie to win the game 1-0. And we were so poor though. Everyone had an off day. And things were better against Watford. Showed a bit more fight at least, created chances at least, were in a game with them. But again, a silly mistake from Emmanuel Ivu. Dramer takes a throw in across the goal, comes to Ivu, who had plenty of time to do something with the ball and clear it. Instead, he loses it, and Dennis buries a goal for Watford, and that's the winning goal against a 2-1-0 defeat in a week. On a side note, for Ivu, I kind of feel a bit bad for him. So Sanderson was actually back from suspension but didn't play. Venus chose not to play him or whoever's making these decisions. On beforehand, I didn't actually mind that because I actually think Ivu, although I'm not his biggest fan, I think he has been playing better lately. He's definitely played his best football lately with us. And I kind of felt bad for him, though. It was just a completely unforgivable mistake. And I saw Buchanan kind of, I think it was Buchanan was kind of berating him a bit. And it's almost like, I'm not at all, but I absolutely do not have a problem with teammates like shouting at each other and stuff when they do something like that. But it was such an obvious mistake. I almost thought it was unnecessary to have a go at him. I was like, Ivu knows.
You need to pick your teammates up in those moments, really,
Yeah,
rather
exactly.
than
It
keep
wasn't.
them down.
I think that kind of response is more, say, if you're not tracking back, say, if you're lazy, you don't, or you bottle a tackle or something. This was just like, Ivu knew. He must have known straight away. He was like, oh, like he doesn't need someone shouting at him in that point. He knows he's messed up. So yeah, but anyway, 2-1-0 defeats in a week. We are now only out of the relegation zone on goal difference, and that's only because Huddersfield and Rotherham drew at the weekend as well. I don't know how Huddersfield dropped points there. Rotherham are so poor. And so with 8 games to go, we got huge games coming up. We've got QPR away next. It's gonna be like a battle at the bottom. It's gonna be a massive game. Here's the thing. Tony Mowbray's gone off with, an illness, had to have an operation, we believe. And they said, we think he'll be out for like do you think we think he'll be away for 6 to 8 weeks. With that, my opinion on it is, and the whole sort of do we need to get an interim in thing is, obviously, he probably really trusts Mark Venus, but we are properly in the doghouse now. We are like seriously facing relegation. And is Mark Venus the man to lead the troops out of that? Especially when you consider we've lost a lot of our like leaders over the last, players that have left. Like, I know we've still got Juki and players like that, but we've lost players like, okay, I'm not his biggest fan, but we lost Troy Deeney. We've lost, George Friend, Harley Dean, Michael Morrison, players that had been there, Maxime Collin, players that had been there and done it and could drag us out. We don't really have many of those players left, and we don't have a manager who's been there and done it. So getting an interim in, I don't think is the worst thing in the world, especially if Mowbray isn't ready to come back. I think if Mowbray was ready to come back, like that could be the lift everyone needs, and that could really, you know, the football we were playing under Mowbray was really good, the atmosphere was really good, and I think it would give everyone a boost. It just Mowbray shouldn't have to rush back though. Like if he's not well,
No,
or if he's had
not at all.
surgery, if he needs to recover, like it, under no circumstance should he prioritize anything other than that. So the news this morning is very much that it seems like Rowett is going to come back. What, like just over 7 years after he got sacked by the last ownership in very controversial circumstances?
It's like it's come full
It's
circle with
mad.
the BSHL, isn't it?
It's crazy. Yeah, it's like what. Football's a weird thing, man. I get this. Like, Rowett signed Jukovics in 2016. Duke has played under across 8 years, like 10 permanent managers, I think, maybe
Something like
11.
that, yeah.
Who's he played under? He played under Rowett. We've had so many managers, even I'm forgetting. Rowett, Zola, Redknapp, Cottrell, Monk, Clatet, Karanka, Boya, Eustace, Rooney, Mowbray. So he's played under 11 separate permanent managers, 12 if you
And
count,
row
and Rowett again. So 12 if you count
it
Rowett
again.
again. And so yeah, he signed him. Rowett got sacked a few months later. Duke stayed for the next 8 years, and now he's out of contract in the summer. And Rowett's coming back again for the last couple of months of his contract. If he does leave, that is just extraordinary. Rowett, I feel like, has unfinished business with Blues. It's just pretty mad to see him come back almost 10 years later. He could be. He's very experienced in the Championship. Obviously, after Blues, he was at Millwall for a few years, wasn't he? And I think before that, he was at Stoke and Derby, I think.
Stoke and Derby, yeah. It never worked for him really at either of those clubs.
No, he did pretty well at Millwall, though. I know he missed out on playoffs a few times, but he did pretty well. I think he's just a back to basics, you know, rough and tough manager that. Not that he's rough and tough, but his style of football is, you know, he might just be what
And
we
he might
need.
be rough and tough. He's spent like the last 3 or 4 years in Millwall,
Yeah,
so.
true. Yeah, true. So I'm cautiously optimistic about it, and I think I would love us to not need an interim, but I think it's quite obvious that we probably do. But I also hope this has all been. I hope Mowbray's okay with this. I hope it's all been not done. Kind of. I hope it's all been kind of properly done with and properly, because it is Mowbray's project still, and hopefully. Hopefully now we can stay up under Rowett, and Mowbray is well enough to come back when he's ready to come back, and we can kick on and properly get this new era going. Because I don't think anyone expected this to be how this season turned out. You think back to like the Leeds game, which was the first home game of the season, and it was an electric atmosphere, Tom Brady, fireworks going off. I don't think anyone thought we would have, including interims, six separate people take charge of games at Blues this season. This is just, I've seen us have seasons where, like the season Rowett got sacked, we had, obviously it was Rowett, Zola,
Zola.
Redknapp. I literally just said it all and I still forgot because there's so many. The following season we had Redknapp, Cottrell, Monk. I've seen some mad seasons at Blues. This genuinely might be like the top of them all. This might be the craziest season I've seen at Blues, which is not an exaggeration. It's been absolutely mental. Yeah, Eustace, Rooney, Spooner, Mowbray, Venus, Rowett, all taking charge of games for Blues this season. But I think it's what we need. I think if people get behind Rowett, let's get over the line. Let's do it. Unfortunately, I think Duke got injured in the last game and had to go off, actually, which is, I think he'd almost be guaranteed a starting place otherwise because he's very much a Rowett player. But yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic, a little bit excited. You know, let's get it done. Let's just get it over with. And because I'd much rather, you know, we need to be in the Championship next year. League One would be a huge step back in this project.
And you know, people talk about like dropping from the Premier League to the Championship in terms of the revenue loss is absolutely huge. It's the rate, the money's obviously different, but the ratio is pretty much almost the same when you drop into League One. You know, League One to League Two isn't much of a difference, which is why you see clubs easily like jump between those two. But the difference for like dropping from the Championship into League One, you think of Sunderland, Sheffield Wednesday, Derby, you know. It's some of them are still in there, and it took How many years did it take Sunderland to get out of League One?
It was
Sunderland are a
like four or
massive
five,
club.
wasn't it?
It
Yeah,
took them
four or
about
five.
5 years to get out of League One. They just
Yeah.
couldn't get out of it. It's not an easy division to bounce back out of due to that huge revenue loss between the two leagues.
Yeah.
It would be catastrophic, I think.
It will be, and especially with we talked about, we've got, a lot of players out of contract in the summer. This summer's going to be a really exciting opportunity to like rebuild the team with kind of less financial constraints, all being well, with Mowbray. It's a really exciting time for us to go down. It'd just be a huge stopgap and all that. So yeah, that's the big news. Let us know, those of you that are listening and watching, what you think. Is this a wise decision to get an interim in? And if so, is Rowett the man for the job? I'm happy with it. Obviously, I'm the guy who defended Rooney for as long as possible. But yeah, this obviously, it's just completely mad circumstances. No one could, we finally get someone in who is absolutely the right appointment in Mowbray, and then obviously, unfortunately, has to go off. But yeah, Rowett coming back, getting those 2015 vibes going, getting my uni years vibes going again. But yeah.
Damari Gray will be on his way back from Saudi Arabia before you know it.
Yeah, probably. Is that where he is now? Here he is. Clayton Donaldson getting back. Fabbrini getting back. Just everyone but David Cotterill. Just don't get David Cotterill back. Yeah, so that's very eventful times at Blues, but almost as eventful at Villa, shall we say, because you had two very big games last week, starting on Thursday night.
Yeah, back to Villa Park for me personally on Thursday night, in the Holt End for the Ajax game. A very, very special night. I remember vaguely being at the game when we played Ajax at home in this UEFA Cup campaign in like 2008, 2009, I think it was. And that Martin Larsson header, I do remember, to put us 1-0 up that night. So it's kind of weird again thinking of things coming full circle. Our next adventure into Europe, we're playing Ajax, and yeah, a really, really amazing night. We talked about how drawing the first leg was definitely more advantageous to us than it was to Ajax. Not that it really meant anything, but there's no away goals or anything like that. But we really kind of turned it on. Ajax, they're not the team they were 4 or 5 years ago when they had that incredible Champions League run, and really, really should have got to the final. They were very poor on the night, really. We had a slight injury scare when Ollie Watkins clattered the goalkeeper after about 10 minutes and was like, when play you'll know this, when players go down, you can tell when they're hurt and when they're not. And like, he looked really badly hurt, and like he looked like in a lot of pain, putting his shirt over his face, and there was like the whole ground was like silent, like everyone was like holding their breath. Thankfully he was all right. He played on, scored a wonderful headed goal to put us 1-0 up, and then went off about 5 minutes later, into the first half. So it looks like it was just a cut for him. He obviously played the West Ham game as well. Leon Bailey and Moussa Diaby were both playing. They were both fantastic. Ajax couldn't really handle them. Something I really noticed as well is, blimey, the referees in the Conference League, especially in the two Ajax games, they are so card happy. First challenge, Morgan Rodgers made a foul after like 4 minutes. Booking. It was like across this tie, there were three red cards, all for second yellow offenses. Like it was not a game. Like you think of like games where there could be three red cards and they're barely even bookings. It absolutely insane that it was three red cards across the tie. The second yellow for the Ajax player that got sent off the other night, it is a second yellow. He has pulled his shirt, and if he's already on a yellow card, pulling someone while they're running through on goal, you are asking to be sent off, really. But Leon Bailey's got a wonderful goal. John Duran, who obviously came on for Ollie Watkins, scored an absolute screamer. I'm gutted it was at the other end of the pitch. Absolute wonderful goal. And Moussa Diaby looks to be finding a bit of form again, and he's got a really, really nice goal as well. In terms of a three-word match review for that, I will just go with quarter-final bound. We'll grade it an A, and Moussa Diaby was my man of the match. I thought he was very impressive, and he's, you know, been out of the team a lot. He started the season really, really well, then really sort of tailed off. And, you know, we've traditionally had issues in the past with players that have come from France really struggling to settle at Villa Park. I was starting to get a bit worried that maybe he would be joining that quite extensive list of French players that for some reason have really struggled, which is mad. Like, we've had players, you know, we've got like quite a few South Americans in our team, and they've settled really, really well. And there's quite a lot, you know, there's a few Spaniards and what have you, but we have had a real history of French players and some French managers, just, whatever it is, Birmingham just doesn't agree with them.
Some French man, oh, Julio, I guess. Remy
Yeah,
Gard, is he
Julien
French?
Remigard, yeah. Not Tim Sherwood.
Paul Lambert.
So yeah, but a wonderful night. Quarterfinals. We've got Lille. We've probably, you know, if you want to win competitions, you're gonna have to play the best teams at some point. But you arguably want a nice route into the final. Should we get there? We've probably got the hardest run to the final that we could have asked for, which is Lille and then either Olympiacos or Fenerbahce. And the real gutting thing is, I don't mind playing the big sides, the best sides. I was really excited when we drew Ajax out the hat. It's gutting that we're away in the second leg for both the quarterfinal
Yeah.
and, should we get there, the semi-final. Like, a second leg semi-final at Villa Park against like Fenerbahce or Olympiacos would have been insane. And the one thing I was kind of hoping we wouldn't have it in our Conference League run was maybe having to play a second leg away at Fenerbahce. Not that I think Fenerbahce are this incredible team or anything, but away second leg in Turkey is not something to take lightly. I mean, look what happened when we played away in Poland earlier on this year against Legia. Like, those fans are nuts. I mean, did you see what happened in the Fenerbahce
Trabzonspor.
Trabzons? Yeah.
I did see something about that. Yeah,
Like,
like the fans.
utterly mad.
They're not for the light-hearted, the faint-hearted. The
No, it wouldn't have
light-hearted.
been an
Yeah.
away day. I'd have been rushing to have done Fenerbahce
No.
away, I'll be honest. But
I completely agree though. There's something about like having the second leg at home. Just like I think of like the West Ham semi-final in the cup and stuff. Yeah, there's something about it that the first leg can't quite. It can be great, but it doesn't quite replicate it.
it's because it's half time, isn't it? Effectively, at the end of the game, it's
It's not
like,
every, you're not going to have it concluded there and then. Even so though, beating Ajax, who were one of the stronger teams in the competition, you must be pretty pretty excited about
yeah,
what could
and the
happen.
way we sort of moved past them with effective ease, really. You know, we had a few hairy, scary moments in Amsterdam the week before, but we were never really, you know, it was a very much a almost like a dead rubber nil-nil. It was a game of very few chances, and it very much suited us. We've gone to Villa Park and we've just completely turned them over. Jordan Henderson was absolutely rubbish. And he copped quite a bit of abuse from all four stands of the home support at Villa Park. So I did see an interesting stat today, because obviously it's the international break next week. It's the first time in almost like a generation that Ajax have had no players in the Netherlands squad, and we've got one in the England
Oh,
squad.
wow. Yeah, that's pretty mad, actually. Yeah, I never thought about that.
Yeah, so it's just a damning state of where Ajax are at the moment. But yeah, fantastic night. Tickets for Lille are on sale for season ticket holders now. They go on sale to members, which is me, on Thursday. They go on sale half an hour before my flight takes off on Thursday
Oh,
night.
mate.
So there was a slight moment of like a panic when the ticket release came out. I was like, oh my God, am I going to be in the air? Just so.
Half an hour before it takes off, it's still pretty hairy. Still a
I will
bit.
almost be certainly booking it on the plane. So.
I'd maybe get someone to try to do it for you.
Yeah, we'll see. I might
You'll
have to
get
put
one.
some
You'll be
backups in
fine.
place. I'll be fine. So that was Ajax, and then we played West Ham on Sunday, so a couple of days ago. We made a couple of changes. We went so for the, it's really weird. So as I said all year, we play one formation, which is this 4-2-2-2, because we play this sort of box midfield. Last week against Spurs, we went to a very traditional five at the back, which was nothing we'd seen before, and this time we went to a very traditional 4-4-2. We played with two strikers. I haven't seen us go sort of we haven't gone too up top since the Watkins Ings days. I kind of thought though, like seeing Ollie Watkins in a two up top were gone. I didn't think I'd ever see it again. Didn't really work. We were very poor in the first half. We definitely missed John McGinn. Playing out from the back, I'm a big fan of it. It will go wrong occasionally, but you also need your midfield. If you're going to play out from the back, you need your midfielders in positions to lay it off to. And there was a bit of a disconnect between the defence and the midfield, which is why we really struggled in that first half. We gave the ball away a lot trying to play out from the back. And we were probably deservingly a goal down at half time. We really were poor. Couple of changes at half time. Matty Cash came on. I think Mr. Diaby came on at half time as well. And a little bit later on, Nicolò Zaniolo came on as well. The three of them were absolutely brilliant when they came on. They had the energy. They changed the game. And the second half was a complete mirror to the first half. We were the dominant team throughout, despite the fact that almost straight after kickoff, we conceded a goal, which was rightly ruled out for handball. And then we were kind of huffing and puffing. We weren't creating too many great chances, and we didn't really test Areola. But we somehow found a way to score a goal, and Zaniolo with his third goal for us. Weird that they've all been in 1-1 draws as well, and kind of important 1-1 draws. A big point against Sheffield United, big point against West Ham, and then an important point in the Conference League group stage as well. And it kind of looked like maybe if there was a team that might win it, it might be us. But we never really created anything clear cut, and the game was very much petering out into a 1-1. And then came a free kick in like the 96th minute or something, which bundled into the back of our own net. We had the longest Premier League VAR check in
Yeah.
VAR Premier League history.
How long was it exactly? I did read it was
It
the
was
longest ever.
just under 6 minutes,
Oh, goodness me.
which is incredible because it's quite obviously handball. Like Thomas Souček like dunks it into the net. And obviously it's hard to tell who got the last touch, whether it was Souček or Bowen. And I understand, and obviously the rule is that if it might have hit Bowen's arm, but it's not conclusive enough. But obviously, if it's hit Souček's arm, then hit Bowen, and then gone in, technically it's a goal. But obviously, you know, Leon Bailey can't pick up the ball next week, run the length of the pitch, roll it, and Ollie Watkins kick it in, and you go, well, Ollie Watkins didn't handle it, so it's a goal. So I think that's probably where the length of time has come from, because obviously I think, you know, the referees and the VAR are looking at the rule going, well, the rule is that, but he has very much gone like tried to score by whacking it in with his arm, and it's only just by luck it's hit Bowen and gone in. And it might have hit Bowen's arm and gone in as well, so it was rightly disallowed, but I can kind of see why it took them so long to get it. But my God, the amount of time with the I think we've conceded the highest amount of goals in the Premier League from the start of the second half to the 60th minute. That for some reason, when we're coming out at the second half, we are conceding goals very, very easily. We conceded two at Spurs last week, conceded what one, you know, it was disallowed against West Ham this week. So I feel like I remember distinctly when we started this podcast at the start of the year, I kept moaning that we were conceding goals at the start of halves all the time. And so it's still a problem, and it's something that I think, you know, it'll probably be next season that we start to iron that out. But something to keep an eye on. Overall, I'll give a grade of a C. We weren't great. We weren't anything special, but the second half was much better, but the first half was really, really poor. And I think I'll give my man of the match to Diaby again. It could be any one of Cash, Diaby, or Zaniolo, really. Matty Cash made an amazing block at 1-1 to keep us level in the game to deny James Ward-Prowse. So any one of those three really could have it. Zaniolo scored the goal, so but we'll give it to Diaby. He looked very good when he came on. So yeah, international break I think suits us. It's obviously it's nice when you have some players in the England squad, although I kind of hope they don't make it because it never really ends well for us. They either get injured or sold or slagged off on social media. But we've got Konsa and Watkins going to England. Moussa Diaby's back in the France squad, which I think that one I was really happy about because I think he needs the confidence and, you know, to go and train with that France team is incredible. So
Yeah.
that'll be good for him. John McGinn's obviously going to Scotland, which I'm also happy about because obviously he's got a 3-game suspension, so a few games in the tank, even though he's going to have a bit of a rest, obviously, with the suspension. But surprisingly, Leon Bailey didn't get called up into the Jamaica squad, so he's not whizzing off all over the globe to play for Jamaica, which is absolutely fantastic, as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah. Shall we do top five Irish players that have played for both Villa and Blues across our generation?
Yes, absolutely. That's important to point out as well. This is like a very much a, sort of in our time, the last sort of 20 years, give or take, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, so that does mean Villa fans, Paul McGrath is not in my top five because I never saw him play for Villa.
Yeah.
He would obviously be top.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it, we're counting players, if they played for Ireland, maybe they're born in England, but if they played for Ireland, they're eligible. I think, that's more than fair, I think. Cool. How do you want to do it, Carl? Do you want to do like, and so to clarify as well, it's not, they haven't got, we're not doing players that played for Blues and Villa. It's going to be like two separate lists. So Villa top five for Ireland, Blues top five for Ireland. And they don't have to have played for the Republic of Ireland as well. So yeah, you get the gist of it.
Yeah, it's just a bit of fun. Obviously, it was Paddy's Day at the weekend, and we're
Yeah.
heading into an international break. And we've got no games to preview, so.
No, exactly. Something different. How exciting. Yeah, cool. Do you want to do Villa's top five, then Blues, or do you want to do like my fifth, then your fifth?
Yeah, shall we do one for
Yeah,
one
sure.
and work our way up? And then we'll do it. I'm sure there's some honourable or
Yes.
not so honourable mentions at the end.
No, of course, yeah. Cool. Shall I start then? My fifth place.
Yeah, go for it.
Cool. My number five is the one and only, the if anyone who gives a birthday shout out to or a Christmas shout out to Callum Byrne is good enough to get on my list. My number five is Clinton Morrison, who played for Blues between 2002 and 2005. So he played for us for 3 seasons, scored twice against Villa, including in the famous 3-0 win at St Andrews in 2002. His glory years weren't actually at Blues. He only scored 15 or 16 goals for us in nearly 100 appearances. He's mainly kind of famous for his time at Crystal Palace, where he had two spells there either side of his time at Blues. But yeah, really likable player. Scored some huge goals. Scored against Liverpool at Anfield, I seem to remember once as well. Formed a really great partnership with Emil Heskey in the 2004-05 season. So yeah, Clinton Morrison. One of my earliest memories of going to Blues is Clinton Morrison playing, and had nearly 40 caps for Ireland. He had 36 caps for Ireland from 2001 to 2006. So yeah, Clinton Morrison's my number five.
My number five is the one and only Glenn Whelan.
Oh my.
Yeah, I know. Well, I remember when we signed Glenn Whelan for like £1 million, or was it £2 million from Stoke? I remember being like very underwhelmed as a summer signing goes. That summer we signed like we got Sam Johnston back on loan, and we signed Robert Snodgrass on loan. And I was like, oh my God, but Glenn Whelan had a very, very successful 2-year stint at Aston Villa. He played 73 games. He ended his 7-year goal drought at Aston Villa as well. He scored two goals. Obviously infamously missed a penalty because for some reason he was taking penalties in a huge Steve Bruce like sack or not be sacked game against Preston. But he was a huge part, especially in the promotion season, of us getting promoted. Especially because under Dean Smith, we played that 4-3-3. He, him, and Conor Hourihan were mostly switching between playing in that number six role, and he put in some absolutely fantastic performances in a Villa shirt, especially as we hit that sort of 10-game winning run. And he was absolutely fantastic. So I have a lot of time for Glenn Whelan. Very much, don't know if he quite makes it as a like a cult hero, but he'd definitely be someone that will be remembered fondly at Villa Park. Obviously played loads of games for the Republic of Ireland as well, and played a lot of Premier League games for Stoke as well. So a relatively successful career. I think he packed up not that long ago. I think he retired maybe a year or so ago. So I'm sure it won't be long before we see him punditing. Or you know what? He could be the next Republic of Ireland manager after John O'Shea.
Couldn't be much worse than Stephen Kenny. The first thing I think of when I think of Glenn Whelan is I remember when you played West Brom in the playoffs, and he made a mistake for Dwight Gale's goal.
Yes.
And
That
I
is the last
remember,
game he played for us, I
was it?
believe.
I remember Paddy Power put a tweet out because he, so he, the mistake was he like turned and tried to pass the ball back to the keeper, did he? And then Dwight Gale nipped it in. Paddy
It was a
Power
completely
put.
on where he played it sort of between Jed Steer and Twanzabi and Mings, I think. And so he underweighted it and got the accuracy of it wrong.
Yeah, I
And
just
Dwight
remember
Gale ran through.
when that happened, Paddy Power put a tweet out saying, "Oh, mistake by Glenn Whelan. Goal is one of the most overused phrases in football of our time," which it is, to be fair. But he makes the Villa top five. Very good, good player in his day though, so I can't knock that. My number four is someone who signed for Blues in the 2008-09 season and was with us for the next 4 and a bit years, and that is Keith Fahey. So was part of the League Cup winning team in 2011. He actually started the game on the left wing. He was electrifying when he came in halfway through the season when we were in the Championship, and I remember he scored an amazing goal against Nottingham Forest where he sort of lobbed the keeper from out wide, and there was a lot of debate as to whether it was a cross or a shot at the time. Great goal. I'm pretty sure watching it, I'm 99% sure it's a shot. But yeah, he was fantastic, and he scored huge goals. He scored in the Reading away game, which we won 2-1 when we got promoted, and kind of struggled to adapt to the Premier League a little bit to start with, but I feel like McLeish did like help mold him into a, you know, good player for us. Scored another amazing goal at home to it was against Crystal Palace. We won 3-1. He scored an absolute rocket of a shot. I think Chris Burke got the assist, I think. But yeah, he was fantastic. He played nearly 150 times for Blues, and he played 16 times for Ireland, scoring 3 goals, including an amazing free kick against Wales. I think Ireland won 3-0, I think. But yeah, he scored an amazing free kick, I remember. So yeah, he played for Ireland from 2010 to 2012. So yeah, Keith Fahey is my number four.
Number four over here is Kieran Clark. Someone, I think he came through the Aston Villa Academy, Kieran Clark. He went on
Sorry,
to.
side note, I forgot to say, you just reminded me, Keith Fahey came through the Villa Academy as well. I forgot to say that. So
There
Keith Fahey could be your number four as well, if you like.
you
So,
go. Maybe he's in the honorable mentions.
well, maybe, yeah.
Kieran Clark played 159 games for Aston Villa before we sold him after we got relegated to Newcastle, which. Obviously, in pre-season, it was very much like, why are we selling to a promotion rival? For the very same reason that summer we didn't sell Joe Bennett to Sheffield Wednesday because Todd Egea was like, why would we sell to a promotion rival? But yeah, it was very sad to see him go. Obviously, this was off the back of Euro 2016 as well, where he did score an own goal for the Republic of Ireland in the group stage. I think it was against Sweden. Because I remember like I said earlier about Watkins and Konsa being in the England squad is they either get sold off the back of it, they get slagged off on social media, or they get injured. And I remember my dad saying something like, "Oh, we need to keep hold of Kieran Clarke. It's not good that we've just been relegated and that he's playing in an international tournament." Then he scored an own goal, and we were like, "You know what? That might stop someone buying him." Alas, it did not. He went on to be. I mean, he hasn't long left Newcastle either. He's had a very long career at Newcastle, obviously got promoted and was quite a regular under Steve Bruce there. He was a very decent player for us. And it's a shame that we lost him when we did, because I'm pretty sure he would have been a big player for us in the Championship. But he was a very good player at a very bad period of Aston Villa history. He was definitely one of the shining lights, I think it's fair to say.
First thing I think of as well when I think of Kieran Clarke, I went to the game Euro 2016. He scored an own goal for against Sweden in the first game. Ireland were 1-0 up, and then he took a diving header into his own net, which was nice of him. It's not like Sweden had Zlatan up front or anything. It's not like they didn't have enough
They still had
firepower.
Kim Kjellström playing in midfield, I think, back then.
Possibly, yeah, possibly. Very good. My number three, and someone who would maybe be, if I. Like we kind of talk about, like in our time, this player I kind of only really saw at the tail end of his time at Blues. If I'd seen more of him in person, he'd maybe be even higher. But I'm gonna say Kenny Cunningham, who played for Blues from 2002 to 2006. He was, yeah, he also went to the 2002 World Cup with Ireland as well, with Mick McCarthy in Japan and South Korea. Yeah, just a really solid centre back, proper leader. Ended up captaining Ireland, was captain of Blues for a good while as well. was with us for like the three good Premier League years. Where we kind of finished mid-table every year, but unfortunately he left when we got relegated in 2006. But he had a really long career with Ireland as well. Played for Ireland for nearly 10 years. Called it a day in 2005, and that was after he first got his first cap in 1996. So had a really solid career, Kenny Cunningham. One who kind of seems to have kind of disappeared a bit since he retired. You don't really hear too much about him now. But yeah, Kenny Cunningham, number three. But as I say, if I was a bit older, I think he maybe could be maybe second on this list. He wouldn't be first. But yeah, Kenny Cunningham, number three.
Number three over here is Richard Dunn. Premier League icon, it's fair to say. Like you think of like the early years of the Premier League, I feel like he's someone that you know, if you're just remembering players who played in the Premier League when we were growing up, I feel like Richard Dunn would be someone you go, oh my God, Richard Dunn at Manchester City. And he obviously played for us from 2009 to 2013. So he played about 111 Premier League games for us. I think he has the record for the most own goals in Premier League history. He was definitely a defender that would always try and get something on a shot or a block, and sometimes it would just send it into the back of the net.
Yeah.
But yeah, he also had a really long Ireland career. I think he played for the Republic of Ireland for about 13 years. And in that time he made like 80 caps. So very, very long career. Five goals. He's definitely like a dependable, solid, no nonsense centre back. He's definitely he wouldn't be suited to like Pep ball now, you know.
Bloody hell. Very much of his time, wasn't he?
Yeah, 100%. He was definitely, you know, he was basically our Martin Larsson replacement effectively because of his ongoing injury struggles. So he definitely did a job for us. Obviously, he played in a cup final and was, you know, Martin O'Neill signed him, big player under Martin O'Neill. So, yeah, Richard Dunn, solid, dependable. That's why he makes the middle of this list.
Very good, yeah. I think he might also be the most red-carded Premier League player. He's certainly up
yes,
there.
Yes, I think so. Again, because he just threw in a last-ditch challenge because he was the last man or something.
Yeah, good player, though. My number two, so again, maybe slightly more because of my memory of him compared to, say, someone like Kenny Cunningham. My number two is going to be Lee Carsley, who only played for Blues for two seasons and only really played for us a lot in his first season, which was the year we got promoted under Alex McLeish in 2008-09. But I think he was easily one of our best players that year. He was absolutely fantastic in midfield. I remember I talked earlier in this podcast about like us not having leaders and like, you know, hard, strong players who would like get you through tough times. Lee Carsley was like, well, we'd kill for a Lee Carsley now. He was excellent in midfield. And he was like a local lad, you know, his family are all Blues fans by all accounts. And yeah, you could tell he really cared. He was absolutely fantastic. Ended up having a really good career for Republic of Ireland, played 40 times for them between 97 and 2008. So 11 years for any level, one team's, you got to be doing something right. And he actually came back, of course, to manage Blues on an interim basis for a few games. I think it was in between Redknapp and Cottrell, maybe. And he's one who's kind of been linked with Blues job on a permanent basis a few times, but he's actually doing very well now. I think it's the England under 21s. I think he's the manager of now. Very highly rated by all accounts. So one to keep tabs on for the future in terms of where his managerial or coaching career goes. One I would be very happy to see get the Ireland job on a permanent basis, but I don't know how feasible that is. I wonder if you hear rumours that maybe the England setup are planning bigger things for him. After Southgate, it's just the rumour you hear every now and again. But yeah, absolutely class on his day. I know it was only really one full season where he had us in his prime, but it was a great season. So yeah, maybe a little bit of personal bias, but yeah, Lee Carsley, I'm gonna put as my number two.
I always remember him playing for Everton. He played for Everton years. He played so many games for them. Anyway, my number two, one of my absolute heroes growing up, Shay Given. It's very rare, I think, sometimes, you know, when you're a kid and you're watching football and there's players that don't play for your club that you just love. They might play for England or, you know, in this case, they played for Ireland. And then one day they do come and join your club. I remember signing Shay Given was like a personal, like, oh my God, one of my idols growing up as a young goalkeeper back in the day. So that one was really special. But it maybe didn't go the way that I think he probably wanted it to, in all honesty. Obviously, I think he did we sign him from Manchester City after he'd been usurped by Joe Hart. He was a McLeish signing. He just joined us at a point where we were very much heading down, really. He only played 59 apps in the Premier League. He obviously was the cup goalkeeper when we got to the FA Cup final under Tim Sherwood. He had been bombed out by Paul Lambert. He was part of that infamous bomb squad with Hutton and Darren Bent, just because they were on big money, and the club needed to move them out. So obviously, the best way to move players out is to just bomb them out. Yeah, nice one, Paul. So he does make number two. There may be some personal bias there just because of how much I loved Shay Given when he was at Newcastle and Manchester City and that. And obviously he played like 134 times for the Republic of Ireland as well. You know, he must have been the goalkeeper at Euro 2016. He was definitely the goalkeeper at Euro 2012. So yeah, definitely. I love Shay Given. I'd love to see him. Love to see him again at Villa Park in some sort of punditry capacity, I think.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, very good goalkeeper. Yeah, so my number one then, absolute no-brainer. Like, it was very much he's number one and then working backwards from there. Yeah, Stephen Carr, one of the best Blues players ever in my opinion. Obviously the captain when we won the League Cup. I talked about like Carsley being like, you know, I die for a player like him. Right now, Carr is that and then some. You know, he was came out of Well, the story was that he came out of retirement. He actually said, I mentioned on the pod a few weeks ago, I went to an evening with Stephen Carr a month or two ago, and he was saying that isn't quite accurate. He was kind of saying it was more like I just couldn't get a club. So everyone thought I'd retired. But then he got a shot at Blues and, you know, came in, got us promoted as captain, got us in the top 10 the next season, won the cup with him. Obviously, we got relegated the following year. But yeah, a really special player, had like a proper, like, you know, like jacked, like muscled man, you know, and he had this stereotype that he was like old and was on his last legs, but he honestly ran more than anyone in that team. He was absolutely exceptional. Yeah, possibly my favorite. No, Duke's probably right there. Stephen Carr being my top five Blues players ever. That guy's fantastic. He was really unlucky with his Ireland career, despite having a very long Ireland career. He actually played for Ireland for across 8 separate years, so 1999 to 2007, nearly 50 caps. But he didn't get to go to any major tournaments with Ireland. He didn't go in 2002 through injury, which was something he kind of touched on at the evening with Stephen Carr as well. And then obviously Ireland didn't qualify for the 2006 World Cup under Steve Staunton when they really should have. They definitely had the squad too. So he's kind of unfortunate in that sense. But yeah, an absolute captain, leader, legend if I ever saw one. So yeah, my number one is Stephen Carr easily.
I'll never forget him flicking the V's up at the North Stand after it must have been the 1-0 James Milner penalty derby game.
For sure.
Yeah, that was him and Lee Bowyer just completely lost the plot walking past the home fans.
Pretty much.
Absolutely hilarious. My number one, I don't think it's any surprise at all if you know me, and that'll be Conor Hourihan, a man we signed for like 3 2.5 3 million quid from Barnsley in January of 2017. He went on to play 151 games for us, scored 29 goals, 23 assists, absolute cult hero. You know, for me, he'd be like almost a legend. Legends are maybe not, but a personal legend. So that's why I said a cult hero. Obviously, he scored an absolute screamer against the Blues. He scored an absolute screamer against the Baggies to resurrect our playoff semi-final. Obviously, we touched about Glenn Whelan making the mistake a bit earlier on. His Ireland career, he was in the Ireland team as it was very much on its decline. I think it's fair to say he's only made 36 caps. He scored one goal, which obviously was a free kick. I think it was probably against Gibraltar at home or something. I remember they were lobbing tennis balls on the pitch around that time. So the shame for him really, that maybe he didn't get the Ireland caps. Had he have played 10 years earlier, maybe it's fair to say. But in terms of his club career, it's second to none. Obviously, he's a player that scored in League One, League Two, the Championship, the Premier League, and for his country, not very many players can say they've worked their way up quite like that. So obviously he might get promoted again this year with Derby. So they're flying in League One at the moment, and he's the captain there. So I have a lot of time for Conor Hourihan, and so he's my number one.
Yeah,
Should we do
nothing to
some
be sniffed
honorable
at as
men?
well. Sorry, nothing to
No,
be sniffed at,
nothing.
36 caps either. But I do agree. Yeah, should we bomb through some honorable mentions quickly?
We'll start with some good ones and or stop with some rubbish ones and get better, I suppose. Technically you could include Jack Grealish, but he never actually played any caps for the Republic of Ireland,
Yeah, I forgot
so
you can't. Yeah.
you can't count him. He made his debut though the same night as Callum Robinson, the Republic of Ireland CR7. He only played about five games for us. But he's gone on to have a semi-decent career in the Championship. Obviously, he's on Cardiff's bench now, but he was certainly someone who would give nightmares to any Chelsea fan from his time at Sheffield United. We'll do this one in a second. Robbie Keane, very unlucky not to make my top five. The only reason I didn't put him in my top five was because he only played seven games for us. He was on a short-term loan from LA Galaxy. He scored three goals, two of them were against Wolves at Molineux, in which, again, we won 3-2. We stayed up that year by 2 points. So that loan signing very much kept us in the league that year under Alex McLeish. And again, another one of my personal childhood heroes coming on to play for Villa was Robbie Keane, which was absolutely fantastic. I had an Ireland shirt with Robbie Keane on the back at one stage as a kid. Ender Stevens never really got given a chance at Villa. He only made about nine appearances, but he went on to be a very big player for Portsmouth and Sheffield United when they had their incredible Premier League finish in 2019-20. And had a few good games, got a handful of caps for Ireland. Stephen Ireland, absolute disaster signing in the James Milner transfer deal. Never wanted to join the Villa. And he looked like a player that never wanted to play for Villa. He only scored one goal, which I believe was in a 3-1 win away at Chelsea. And he somehow played 58 times for us. A player I would have no time for is Stephen Ireland. And the last honourable mention, and I'm sure he'll make your list as well, Dan. Scott Hogan, 61 appearances, 10 goals, very much an expensive flop at Villa Park. It just did not work out for him. It's definitely worked out a bit more for him at the other side of the second city, but in claret and blue, it just wasn't to be.
Cool, very good. Yeah, a few honourable mentions on the Blues side. So someone who I'm like, if I was a bit older, maybe could have got on, and people who probably, well, almost certainly would have got on to my top five, and people may have expected to get on, is Jeff Kenner, who played 27 times for the Republic of Ireland and played for Blues between 2001 and 2004. Was part of the team that got promoted via the playoffs with Blues to the Premier League for the first time. Very popular figure. It was a very good right back for Blues. But again, I think it's just like an age thing. Like, I have very little memory. I don't know if I ever actually saw him play in person. In fact, I don't think I could have if his last game was 2004. Yeah, so that's the reason he didn't make my list. I think if I was a bit older, he almost certainly would have. Darren Randolph played for Blues between 2013 and 2015, so they were far from glory years, but he was a very good goalkeeper for us, and so good that he was a regular in the Republic of Ireland team between 2012 and made his last appearance in 2020. He played 50 times for the Republic of Ireland, and ended up marrying Alexandra Burke, who won the X Factor, which is one of the most
That's
random
random.
bits of
Blimey.
trivia, yeah, I've ever read, really. Shout out to our mate Liam, who claimed that he knew that because he saw it on Loose Women. So thanks for that, Liam. opens more questions than it does answers, I think, that one. But
Yes.
yeah, he was Darren Randolph was really good for us in the season where we just about stayed up under Lee Clark. He was probably our best player that season. So yeah, Darren Randolph definitely gets in. Kevin Long, a more recent one, obviously, only played for us for a calendar year between 2023 and 2024. Obviously, he's moved to Canada now and slightly regret selling him now. I think he's someone we really could use. But yeah, really solid old school centre half, Kevin Long. Obviously, you mentioned him, Scott Hogan, has had a better time at Blues than he has at Villa, but I think he will still ultimately go down as one of the great what could have been players at Blues. Everyone knows the Scott Hogan story and what it's been like with him. Played 12 times for the Republic of Ireland, has never scored. But I will say he is probably the best striker. No, Clinton Morrison. Other than Clinton Morrison, he's the best. He'd be like Benton Morrison's strike partner if you're playing a 4-4-2 made up of Irish blues players, because the only other competition is Adam Rooney, who of course is Irish, played for Blues under Chris Hughton between 2011-12. He'd be another honourable mention. Stephen Gleeson, I would say, is a centre mid, not a great player, but it's kind of serviceable in these like Rowett years that we were talking about earlier. Played for us between 2014 and 2018. And Stephen Kelly had a solid career with the Republic of Ireland and played for Blues between 2006 and 2009. But his best season was definitely the 2006-07 season when we got promoted under Steve Bruce. And then last but certainly not least, someone who definitely deserves to be on this list is the longest serving Blues player in our lifetime, which is I would pick Darren Randolph ahead of this player in goal, but definitely worthy of an honourable mention. Colin Doyle, who played for Blues between 2003 and 2015, which is a very long time, but was best known for that sort of 06-07 season where he came in for a few games at the end, standing in for Mike Taylor and famously saved the penalty away at Wolves to help us win 3-2, which was a huge step towards getting promoted. But yeah, he played four times for the Republic of Ireland. So yeah, I did try and do like an 11 I mentioned to you before we started of like, could you do a one like a you know a team of Blues Ireland players, but it's really difficult because we've had loads of good right backs like Stephen Kelly, Stephen Carr, Jeff Kenner. We had another one called Rob Kiernan that I found. We had a few strikers, a few centre mids. You could have Callum Riley maybe with Stephen Gleeson, but yeah, right wingers and left backs, just an absolute void. I've had none. It's really hard to do that. But if you are going to count him, I will also give a shout out. Debatable whether he should be counted. I'm going to say Dan Crowley, who I think will go down as one of the great anomalies at Blues, because I really liked Dan Crowley. I thought he was really good. Played for us in the Pep Clatet season and very briefly under Karanka. The only reason I'm not sure to count him or not was because he flitted at youth level between England and Ireland, different age categories. I have a feeling, though, his ambition was to play for Ireland at senior level. So if you did want to count him, I really liked Dan Crowley, and I think, yeah, would have liked to have seen him stay at Blues longer. But yes, that's my Blues Island players.
And that'll very much wrap us up today. I don't know what our plan is next week because I'm not around, but
we'll work something out. We'll work
we might,
something
it might be, if we get anything out, it might be short and sweet.
Yeah, it's all good.
With
You're off
a nice
traveling,
eight-hour.
aren't you?
Yeah, I'll be this time next week. I'll be in Hong Kong, so there'll be a nice 8 hour time difference. So it's hard enough to
Nice.
plan it when we're in the same time zone, let alone
Sure.
8 hours. But
For sure.
we'll
We'll
see what
work
we
it
can
out.
do. See you next time, Dan. Remember to like, subscribe, share, put the bell on YouTube so you get notifications when we are out and when the new episodes are out. And until next week or whenever, Dan, up the Villa.
Shot on the Villa. See you next time.